birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good.
Nina Simone, feeling good.
Hello, I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam. Tonight's show is going to be a bit different because February is Black History Month, and Doug Bennett has had me on his Saturday morning show, Unspun, the last two Saturdays talking about Black history. So in part two, today's Unspun, we have had poetry of the Harlem Renaissance and Nikki Giovanni from the 1960s, Audre Lorde from the 1970s, and we finish with Amiri Baraka's poem, Dope. Plus, we have lots of Black history. So tonight's show of Late Night Poetry Jam is to celebrate the courage, wisdom, and creativity of African Americans, and we're going to play the show from Unspun this morning. Thank you. Enjoy. Well, I hope so. And you're right. Part one went by very quickly, and so we ran out of time, and so we're going to pick it up. However, I would like to just do a quick review of some of the authors that we talked about last time. It'll just take me several minutes. But what I really want to show is the strength, the courage, the resilience, the creativity of African Americans within our culture in the face of all odds, because being in our culture and being brought over here to be enslaved people, they faced lynchings, castrations, I mean, genocide, torture. I mean, it was really, really awful. And the undercurrent in the United States seems to have continued some sort of an assault on people of color. So these are the two threads that I would like to work with today, is this strength and this creativity, and on the other hand, this underlying assault on Black people. And so that's how we're going to proceed. Also, in our history books, and we really, in terms of, some people believe that every culture indoctrinates its citizens, and one way to do that is through the textbooks that you use. So in our culture, we have to take a look at who owns the publishing houses, who has the money, who have been the winners, and it's very interesting how we get fed history through that vision. So there are certain things that are included, and then there are certain things that are left out. And what I think what we're talking about overall is what has been left out of history in the U.S. And I had mentioned last time, especially when Devin, this African American man, called in, when I was going to school, we weren't reading any authors of color. Isn't that interesting? There is what is considered the traditional canon, and the joke is kind of, it's dead white men. But that has really opened up. It's opened up to include women and people of color. And I'm just here to help open it up a little bit more. So,
yeah, let me just a quick comment. Nothing really has changed. It's still rich white men, property holders. And so nothing's changed in the sense that they're still controlling the educational system and the economic system. And, whatever we want to call the lack of social justice. So.
And I totally agree with that, and that's one reason that we had the Occupy movement, and we have the 1%, and as I understand it, just going along with what you said, the top 1% or less than the top 1% controls the wealth of the entire bottom 50%. That's truly amazing. So last week we talked about Frederick Douglass. We didn't read his autobiography, which I would encourage people to do if you really want to understand what it was like to be an enslaved person. But we did read What Is to the Slave, the 4th of July, and he really focuses on the barbarity of whites against people of color in the United States. And then we went into Sojourner Truth, Ain't I a Woman, which I really like.
That was a great, and we finished with Malcolm X, which was a great speech.
Yes.
Which I had never heard. So,
His speech, unlike Dr. King, and we're kind of getting ahead of myself here, Dr. King, you know, I have a dream, and Malcolm X is, it's the ballot or the bullet. You know, and so Malcolm X did create a certain amount of fear in whites. And my contention is that we need all of these voices. And we have to remember that that Dr. King was not particularly liked during his lifetime. You know, now we go, oh, well, people should just be like Dr. King. Well, okay. But he also wrote some really anti-war pieces as well. So.
Well, and he was instrumental in there's a balance there, a dichotomy, because if the rich white men were having to look at something like the Black Panthers as opposed to Dr. King looked like the sweeter of the two choices, right?
And at the same time, J. Edgar Hoover was telling him to commit suicide. If he would go out in public, often people would spit on him, bricks were thrown at him. This is Dr. King. It didn't matter if you were seen as a man of peace or if you were seen as a man of aggression. They both died. They both were killed. So we have to consider that. So, and I just want to remind our audience about the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, and three wonderful amendments came out of that time, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, and the 15th allowing a voting for citizens. But that might sound like a good thing, right? Except for the fact that blacks were very heavily discouraged from voting by KKK members, by moving the ballot, the balloting place. I mean, that's outrageous. Being arrested the night before voting. So it was very difficult even after the amendments were passed. We talked about Ida Wells Barnett and Walter White, who investigated lynching, Booker T. Washington and Du Bois, and Emmett Till, the young... In 1955, I mean, some people go, oh, well, that just happened, you know, in the 1800s. Well, in 1955, a 13-year-old boy who had just turned 14 was brutally murdered in the South, in Money, Mississippi, by these two white brothers. Now, Doug, this is really outrageous. How could those two brothers, for 4,000, they went to trial, they were found not guilty, and then 2 months later, they sold their story to Look magazine for $4,000. How can that be?
Well, it just shows you the attitude back in the 50s, and we're not too far from there. But a part of what came out of that, though, was the bus boycott.
Yes,
and,
yes.
So Emmett Till's death wasn't in vain entirely. So.
It was not, and Mamie Till, his mother, was a courageous, courageous woman. She brought the body back to Chicago, and she was criticized for putting it on display, but she said, this happened to my son. I want you to see what happened to my son. So they had him in a glass case. Thousands upon thousands of people went to that viewing, and it did spark more movements and action, because it was like and what she says, we were under assault. We were under assault at this time. So what I wasn't able to do last time was to read three or four poems from the Harlem Renaissance, even though we left off with Malcolm X, which was in the 1960s, and we're going to go back to that. I would like to read just a few poems from the Harlem Renaissance, basically with the same themes that we have been talking about. It's the undercurrent of... Yes, one writer said Black history is one long black song. It's, you know, and it's very, very beautiful. So remember, in the Harlem Renaissance, a lot of blacks moved from the South, moved to Harlem, and it was this flowering, this blossoming of literature, of music, of dance. It was just, it was the place to be. I wish I had been there. It was the
place
to be.
And that was what, in the 60s?
Huh? Well, it was considered 1920 to 1940s, the Harlem Renaissance, and then that moved into other writers in the 60s. So I'm going to start with the poem by Claude McKay, one of the famous writers of the Harlem Renaissance. And this is called Tiger. The white man is a tiger at my throat. See, that is such an interesting, I'm sorry, I'm going to stop right there. That is such an interesting image, because there are many poems that address this particular theme. So it's I think it's a lovely image. The white man is a tiger at my throat, drinking my blood as my life ebbs away, and muttering that his terrible striped coat is freedom's and portends the light of day. Oh, white man, you may suck up all my blood and throw my carcass into the potter's field, but never will I say with you that mud is bread for the Negroes. Never will I yield. Europe and Africa and Asia wait. The touted New Deal of the New World's hand, new systems will be built on race and hate. The eagle and the dollar will command. Oh Lord, my body and my heart to break. The tiger in his strength, his thirst must slake. So even then, there is that concern about, you know, what is it that moves people, that motivates people, and is it the dollar? And race and hate. Now, excuse me, Langston Hughes was another interesting writer during the Harlem Renaissance. And the one that the first poem that I want to read by Langston Hughes is called The Ballad of the Landlord. And it's kind, I think it's kind of a funny poem, but it has a very strong message as well. Landlord, landlord, my roof has sprung a leak. Don't you remember I told you about it way last week? Landlord, landlord, these steps is broken down. When you come up yourself, it's a wonder you don't fall down. $10 you say I owe you? $10 is what you say is due? Well, that's $10 more than I'll pay you till you fix this house up new. What? You're going to get eviction orders? You're going to cut off my heat? You're going to take my furniture and throw it in the street? You're talking high and mighty. Talk on till you get through. You ain't going to be able to say a word if I land my fist on you. Police, police, and come and get this man. He's trying to ruin the government and overthrow the land. Coppers whistle, patrol bell, arrest, precinct station, iron cell, headlines in the press, man threatens landlord, tenant held, no bail, judge gives Negroes 90 days in jail. So just wanting to have his place livable, fixed up, wasn't going to happen. And he's the one who ends up in jail. The next poem that I want to read by Langston Hughes, and this is a rather famous poem, is called Harlem. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? Well, when we talk about
some images,
it does, and the whole idea of what happens to a dream deferred, you know, what happens to that, the promises that are made, or the policies that are going to happen, or the equality that is allegedly right out there in front of us, but it's deferred, and so what does happen, and so the ending of this, you know, does it explode, and do we have riots, do we have movements, do we have, you know. You can't, it seems to me, you can't keep putting the dream down under the thumb.
But of course, they keep trying.
Yes, they do.
Like the Supreme Court is basically attacking the Voting Rights Act that Martin Luther King worked so hard to get in place, gave his life for. They don't quit. They just constantly trying to, you know, keep people down, and all poor people. But
it is.
But when we look at economics, it really falls on the black community is the hardest. So.
And the Native American as well. So it's really quite incredible. And even though the amendments right after the Civil War gave the vote to men who were citizens, it wasn't until the very late 1950s and early 1960s that the Voting Rights Act was passed by Congress in the U.S. that said, no, you can't charge people, you can't have a tax on people to vote, because what happens if you're poor? Or no, you can't have a literacy test that whites couldn't even pass, but you know, you're not going to let... So it seems like that is just another machination.
And we have it going on today in certain states.
Yes.
IDs.
Yes.
So you got to have an ID to vote.
So the last poem I think I want to read here from the Harlem Renaissance is called I Too. And I think this is a beautiful poem. I Too. I Too sing America. I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when the company comes, but I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes. Nobody'll dare say to me, eat in the kitchen. Then, besides, they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. I too am America.
Let me do a quick show ID here. We usually do this about quarter after the hour. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Pamela Spoto, a local educator and advocate for peace and justice, is my co-host today, and we're talking about the real black history, the black history that you didn't hear in school or any place else, for that matter, unless you're really looking hard. Our number in the studio, if you'd like to call in, is 530-337-1885, 530-337-1885. Well, back to you, Pamela.
Well, thank you, Doug. So I'm going to move right back up into the 1960s, because that is indeed where we left off last time. And so, Doug, let me ask you this. When you think of the 1960s, what comes to mind? I mean, some people, I ask my students this, and they'll go, oh, that was a strange time. If they even, and a lot of them will say, I don't know that much about it, or I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, well, I grew up in North Hollywood, so... My older brother was part of the SDS and marched and did all of that stuff. And I was aware, of course, you know, of the everything going on in the South and the death of some of the civil rights workers that went down there. And, of course, that's when Martin Luther King was killed. You know, Kennedy was killed, both Kennedys. Were killed. So it was an explosive time, and that was all part of my early years, you know. So Robert Kennedy was and probably wasn't even 15 miles from where I live when he was shot. So you know, so it's very real to me. It always has been.
And you're right, it was an explosive time and a time of upheaval. You know, and I look at it and I think that it was a hopeful time, you know, in my mind, hopeful in the sense that people were coming together and fighting for equality and justice.
Yeah, I think we had more ideals, and the youth then had more ideals. We actually believed in America.
Yes.
And and what it was supposed to stand for, equality and liberty. And yet we witness, you know, our government being undermined by assassins. We watched, you know, I was the Watts riots, you know, were at that time.
And the Vietnam War.
The Vietnam War and black power, even within the military. I was in the Air Force. I remember becoming aware, walking out of, you know, the one of the clubs they have on base to entertain you know, soldiers, and I remember walking outside, and there was a group of black guys, and they, you know, they were giving a black power salute.
right.
Yeah, I'm black and I'm proud.
Yes. And sometimes people go, well, why not? And I'm kind of going off on a tangent here. Why not? What's wrong with white pride? And being black and beautiful was very, very different in the context from which that was coming. It was coming from a totally oppressed place, told that you weren't as smart, and during slavery times you could not read, you didn't have the intelligence, you weren't attractive. And so to counteract that, it was I'm proud, and I'm black, and I'm beautiful. That's very different from white pride, and, you know, the notion of white pride that I'm somehow superior than, than everybody else.
You know, when you came out of a nice white middle class family, and you didn't know any want, you didn't know any fear. So yes, it's very different.
So at that time, and you alluded to this. In fact, you gave a nice list of people. Unfortunately, it was a time. The 60s was a time of assassination, from John Kennedy to Medgar Evers, who worked with the NAACP, a field worker, Malcolm X, Dr. King, Bobby Kennedy. I mean, it goes on and on. J. Edgar Hoover was with us during that time. And I'm going to read a little bit about what he said about Black Power. But at the same time, we had the Black Panthers. And I just don't, I'm looking at this calendar on the wall there. There's Black Panther Party and fists are raised. You know, I'm not sure what was so scary about that. Because initially, the Black Panthers were saying, we need to come together to provide lunch programs in the community. Here is an unsafe corner, crosswalk. People are getting hit in our community. We're going to put in stoplights. And then the Black Panthers organized, and see, it was legal to carry guns then. Isn't that interesting? So you had these tall, black, beautiful men in black jackets, black beret, very powerful looking, carrying guns. And part of that was, as what Malcolm X was saying, you're not going to come into our communities and brutalize us and kill us. We're going to stop singing and we're going to start swinging. And so they were there to protect their communities. But more than that, they were there to monitor the police. And when there were arrests, they were encouraging people to take badge numbers. Well, this totally threatened, right, the people in power and law enforcement. And in fact, the Black Panthers went into Capitol Mall. And it was so interesting because they took the wrong turn and opened the wrong door to Congress was in session. The Congress people hit the floor. I mean, they just, oh my goodness, they're black men with guns, you know? So now, isn't it interesting, though, and I don't want to go off on this either, but today you have white men stand my ground carrying their guns, and that's okay. But the black men in the 60s, protecting themselves and carrying guns, that's when that became illegal.
Yeah, and it's going
on. It's a double
on,
standard.
Yeah, and it carries on today through the police department.
It does.
Only they found ways to protect them. You know, they passed laws so that police records can be secure. But your record or my record or anybody else's information is not secure, right? So.
And this is another underlying theme that runs through Black history. And I was thinking about that while I was driving up. It's not that law enforcement in the South in the 1800s was infiltrated by the KKK. It was they were the KKK. Mm-hmm. Many of the law enforcement officers were also members of the KKK. So underneath this idea, we have this thread, and we're saying today that black people get stopped, arrested, shot down. So this is still with us. So what I want to read here and see what you think about this. This was J. Edgar Hoover, and this was recently released information from COINTELPRO, I read a little bit of that. It's a counterintelligence project that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover founded in the 60s to disrupt, that was the purpose, to disrupt organizations and movements, including the Black Arts Movement, appears to corroborate the claims of infiltration. So, just like, it's so interesting, like peace groups in San Francisco, little white-haired ladies getting together in their houses for, you know, in terms of peace, become infiltrated. So in the 1960s, Hoover was sending in infiltrators into black movements because he decided that the Panthers had to be put up, that blacks couldn't have thought of that on their own. It had to be a communist plot. And so, therefore, it was the most dangerous situation in the U.S.
Yeah, that was a cover.
Yes, that was the cover. That was the cover. So, so going on with J. Edgar Hoover, it aims outlined quite clearly in the document, number one, preventing a coalition of militant black organizations. That's one goal. Preventing the rise of a messiah among black people who could unify and electrify them. Isn't that interesting? I think that is the one that sticks out most to me. So you have people like Dr. King who could electrify the blacks, the movements.
And Malcolm X.
And then you had Malcolm X who could likewise electrify. So they both ended up dead. Isn't that interesting, Doug?
Well, it's more than interesting. I've actually seen it. I mentioned this on my show. There's and it's available on the internet. You can go COINTELPRO, Hoover, King, and it'll come up. But the actual memo, just I think a little before, a month before Martin Luther King died, J. Edgar Hoover told all his people in the FBI to neutralize him.
Yes.
How do you neutralize somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a pretty clear indication of what their intention was.
So that's really, you know, I want to say it's amazing, but it's not. It's not that far-fetched, is it?
Well, I think it's still there. Just take a different form now. We'll call it, instead of communism, we'll call it domestic terrorism. Call it what you want. We're going to use force to keep you down.
And that has been another theme that has run through black history. It's the terror and the fear and the force. That's how lynchings came into play to keep the people down. So now we have the prison industrial complex instead of the peculiar institution of slavery, right, where you have people of color totally beyond their percentage in the population, where you have over half the people in prison, people of color, and working for, what, 10 cents an hour or whatever the case may be. And you still have Mumia Abu-Jamal in prison. You still have Leonard Peltier in prison, you know, political prisoners, as some would call them. So that was J. Edgar Hoover's message. What I wanted to do is read you one poem from the 1960s, and this happens to be one of my most favorite poems by Nikki Giovanni, and she was hanging out with the Black Panthers at that time. And this is called For Sandra, and her neighbor, Sandra, had said, well, why don't you write some pretty poems? Why not a poem about trees or the sky? And so this is Nikki Giovanni's response to that. I wanted to write a poem that rhymes, but revolution doesn't lend itself to bebopping. Then my neighbor, who thinks I hate, asked, do you ever write tree poems? I like trees. So I thought, I'll write a beautiful green tree poem, peeked from my window to check the image, noticed the schoolyard was covered with asphalt, no green, no trees grow in Manhattan. Then, well, I thought the sky, I'll do a big blue sky poem, but all the clouds have winged low since no Dick was elected. So I thought again, and it occurred to me, maybe I shouldn't write at all, but clean my gun and check my kerosene supply. Perhaps these are not poetic times at all. So in the 60s, you do have this these various movements coming together. Some who would say, you know, we walk in peace. Others who would say, hey, we have to meet violence with violence. And we have to make changes because our people are still being brutalized and assaulted. So I really do like Nikki Giovanni. I wanted to read just a little bit more here. From my big book, as I'm kind of moving this over.
Okay, let me do another quick little spot here for the show. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Co-hosting with me is Pamela Spoto, local educator and advocate for peace and justice. And we're celebrating black history and talking about the history you don't hear normally and that you haven't heard. So stay with us. And now, Pamela, another poem.
Well, I'm not going to read that poem quite yet, but we're going to get to that poem. What I wanted to do is read a little bit about Stokely Carmichael. And Stokely Carmichael was born in 1941. And he died in 1998, but he was speaking on the Berkeley campus. Talk about exciting times! And this was in the 1960s. In fact, it was 1966 1956 in November that he gave this lecture in the Berkeley Quad, and it's called Black Power. And so this is kind of where that Black Power salute originates from. So I'm going to read three paragraphs. So the beginning of this is, it seems to me that the institutions that function in this country are clearly racist, and they're built upon racism. And the question then is, how can black people inside the country move? And then how can white people who say they're not part of those institutions begin to move? And then how do we begin to clear away the obstacles that we have in this society that keep us from living like human beings? How can we begin to build institutions that will allow people to relate with each other as human beings? This country has never done that, especially around the concept of white or black. What a wonderful message that would be. You know, how do we move together with equality and justice?
Well, I think we were doing that in the 60s. The young people were able to move together because they didn't have those prejudices. So.
And their goal and their objectives were to be was for equality.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an amazing thing too, that so many students came out black and white and others to face equal rights and anti-war movements. That it's about life and living and treating each other justly. And I'm going to go on and I'm going to read two more paragraphs. This is the next one. We are never going to get caught up with the questions about power. This country knows what power is and knows it very well, and knows what black power is because it's deprived black people of it for 400 years. So it knows that what black power is. But the question is, why do white people in this country associate black people with violence? Because of their own inability to deal with blackness. If we had said Negro power, nobody would get scared. Everybody would support it. And if we said power for colored people, everybody would be for that. But it is the word black, it is the word black that bothers people in this country, and that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah.
And then finally, the last paragraph in this essay that he was, or this lecture that he was giving at Berkeley. And then in the larger sense, there is the question of black people. We are on the move for our liberation. We have been tired of trying to prove things to white people. We are tired of trying to explain to white people that we're not going to hurt them. We are concerned with getting the things we want, the things that we have to be able to have in order to function. The question is, can white people allow that in this country? The question is, will white people overcome their racism and allow for that to happen in this country? If that does not happen, brothers and sisters, we have no choice but to say very clearly, move on over, or we're going to move over on you.
Yeah, that's the beautiful part of that is claiming their own power, like you said, the use of the word black.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
That's powerful.
Yes.
And that's what scares the people in power.
Yes.
Because they're afraid of losing power.
And you know, it was Norm Stamper, right, that you had on this show, and a retired police chief from Seattle. And it goes along so well with what is being said here, because he was saying the culture of policing has to change, because often officers come into that job carrying that fear of blacks. And then that triggers them to, right, pull the trigger, so to speak. So that has to change. Now, we do have the next poem, and this is one of my favorite poems as well. And this was written by a woman named Audre Lorde. And I think it was written at the very end of the 70s, about 1978. And once again, this is to show this underlying theme again about law enforcement and black people, okay? So this is called Power. And by the way, it was about the killing of a young black boy. And so as the story goes, Audre Lorde is driving home when she hears the verdict come in over the radio. And so she pulls off to the side of the road and cries. And then she writes this poem. And the first part of this, the first part and the last part are very poetic. The middle part talks about the court case. Okay, Power. And kind of going along here with what Stokely Carmichael is talking about, power. The difference between poetry and rhetoric is being ready to kill yourself instead of your children. I am trapped on a desert of raw gunshot wounds and a dead child dragging his shattered black face off the edge of my sleep. Blood from his punctured cheeks and shoulders is the only liquid for miles, and my stomach churns at the imagined taste while my mouth splits into dry lips. Without loyalty or reason, thirsting for the wetness of his blood as it sinks into the whiteness of the desert where I am lost without imagery or magic, trying to make power out of hatred and destruction, trying to heal my dying son with kisses, only the sun will bleach his bones quicker. The policeman who shot down a 10-year-old in Queens stood over the boy with his cop shoes in childish blood, and a voice said, "Die, you little motherfucker!" And there are tapes to prove that. At his trial, this policeman said in his own defense, "I didn't notice the size or nothing else, only the color." And there are tapes to prove that. Today, that 37-year-old white man with 13 years of police forcing has been set free by 11 white men who said they were satisfied justice had been done, and one black woman who said, "They convinced me," meaning they had dragged her 4-foot-10-inch black woman's frame over the hot coals of 4 centuries of white male approval until she let go the first real power she ever had and lined her own womb with cement to make a graveyard for our children. I have not been able to touch the destruction within me, but unless I learn to use the difference between poetry and rhetoric, my power, too, will run corrupt as poisonous mold or lie limp and useless as an unconnected wire. And one day I will take my teenaged plug and connect it to the nearest socket, raping an 85-year-old white woman who is somebody's mother. And as I beat her senseless and set a torch to her bed, a Greek chorus will be singing in 3/4 time. Poor thing, she never hurt a soul. What beasts they are.
Yeah, dehumanizing. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. But, yeah, how dehumanizing it is to be treated, you know, picture that young boy. Now we have Tamir Rice. It's the same sort of thing still going on. Young boy shot for no good reason. Within a few seconds of the officer stepping out of the car, he shoots a 12-year-old boy. So, yeah, not much has changed once again. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of black people still feeling this same way today. Black Lives Matter movement is gaining strength, and rightfully so, because nothing's changed. We still have a brutal police force, and I'll have to invite our local police chief to be on with me one day. But and there's still corruption, and we know there's bias with black people. That's been
documented.
I mean, yeah, documented numerous times.
And I never say, just like in any profession, there are really good people that do their job. Like, there are good police people, there are good teachers, there are good accountants, there, you know, every job, good radio show hosts.
Yeah, but they're not shooting people.
Well, that's the thing. And then there are people who are not good at what they do. And when you have a gun and you have a badge and you're not you're not good at what you do.
Well, you may not even be stable mentally.
That's right.
Be employed.
That's right.
So,
and
yeah.
So in this poem, it's really incredible because it's very, and for our listeners, I mean, there are multiple layers to it. But the notion that we have two victims, well, we have more than two victims, but in this poem, you have the black boy that's been shot, and then at the end, you have the elderly woman who has been killed. Now, the elderly white woman who has been killed. So they're both victims. They're both innocent. But the black boy, his killer goes free, the white police officer. And I think she's suggesting that the rage becomes so intense. And if she doesn't learn how to handle that power, and it's really very interesting, the figurative language she uses about turning, because you feel powerless, you feel impotent. What are you going to do? And she goes, and once that teenager decides to put his plug into the socket, you know, and that could just about be anywhere.
And that's powerful.
And that is powerful.
Empowering.
Even though it's deadly, that this is going to continue to happen. However, when he does that to an old white woman, he is a beast. Mm-hmm. But when the white officer does it to the young black boy, the jury says, well, we understand, and he's free to go.
It's justifiable.
So it's the double standard that we're talking about. It's not that people shouldn't be held accountable for their actions. It's the double standard. It's the double standard. And so that happens to be one of my favorite poems.
Yeah, that's a powerful poem.
Now, what I wanted to touch on just briefly is that as this continues, so, you know, we're moving right up here. This is, 2016 and 1985, and I think most people haven't heard of this. I'm not sure, but it was the PUSH movement, and this was in Philadelphia. And John Africa was a leader of this movement, and part of what he was saying was interpreted as anti-police. Once again, stop brutalizing us, speaking out against the police. They wanted him and the people in his house to surrender. His house was in a neighborhood in Philadelphia. And so what the FBI and law enforcement do is that they bring a plane with incendiary devices, and they drop it on this house in Philadelphia in a residential neighborhood. They kill approximately 11 people, 5 children, but it sets over 60 houses on fire in a black neighborhood. I mean, this is incredible.
Well, that goes back to dehumanizing. You're not really people.
Yes. And I don't know whether people have heard, it was in the 1920s, and I just want to point this out because people can do some research on this. It was called Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Black Wall Street. It was something like 20 to 30 blocks of this prosperous neighborhood, Black Wall Street. They had, you know, restaurants, banks, hospitals, jobs. You know, it's a booming area. So one day, and this just blows my mind, this young black man is going to get into an elevator. As the story goes, he trips as you stumble. Sometimes when you get in the elevator, it's kind of jarring. There's a white young woman who's the elevator attendant, and either he reaches out to brace himself and touches her. So the paper comes out and says, black man has outraged white women. Many, many whites within that area burned down Black Wall Street. I mean, this is what happens to prosperity, you know? Mm-hmm. So you had this booming community, 20 square blocks, you know, of black businesses burned to the ground, and many, many people killed. Black people killed.
And what year was this? 1985?
No. This was it. I went back to the 1920s.
Oh, okay.
Because it just reminded me that, you know.
And that was in Florida.
No, this was in Tulsa.
I'm all confused.
I'm sorry, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Okay. But there was what happened in Florida that I wanted to mention for our readers. It was Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This whole area burned to the ground over the same lie, right? That somehow this black man did something bad to this white woman. But in Rosewood, Florida, in 1923, a white woman, because she was having an affair while her husband was at work with a white guy, the white guy beat her up, and she said a black man had beaten her up. Rosewood, the people in Rosewood were lynched. You had two communities, Rosewood, the black community, and Sumner, the white community, side by side. Rosewood was decimated.
What year was that?
That was in the early, that was 1923, I believe. So okay. We have these two things happening in the 1920s. Then we have PUSH, the bombing of the neighborhood in Philadelphia in 1985.
Okay.
So that kind of brings us up to what I wanted to show here is this assault, this continual assault, and once again, African Americans are, you know, their strength and their courage and their tenacity and their creativity, they just keep moving forward, you know, and being part of our culture. So what I would like to, I think, do now is talk a little bit about in the late 1990s, and you have I think before you play the song by Wyclef John, do you think very many people know who Amadou Diallo was?
I doubt it. I doubt they do. So maybe you can give a little.
I'm going to just say for a minute. This happened in New York in the end of the 1990s. So what are we saying? 16, 17 years ago? It's a typical situation. The officers were looking for, they'd heard that there was a rape suspect. They drive by this apartment building, and Amadou Diallo had the misfortune of being standing in the doorway of to the apartments. And so he was surrounded by law enforcement because he was black. So, oh, you know, the black rapist. Oh, there's a black man. So he starts to reach to take out his ID. He's never had any run-ins with the police. He has no record. They fire 41 rounds at him, and 22 hit him. And so Wyclef Jean writes this, sings this song called 41 Shots, and that is what you have.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod with me. Rastafari, I can't forget you, Naughty Dreads, you're up in here. I gotta respect that, you know what I'm saying? Light is in the air.
Enemy on the borderline, who'll be the next to fire? 41 shots by Diallo's side. You said he reached, sir, but he didn't have no peace, sir. But now he rests in peace, sir, in the belly of the beast, sir. You guys are vampires in the middle of the sucking on human blood. Is that your appetite? You said he reached, sir, but he didn't have no peace, sir. But now he rests in peace, sir, in the belly of the beast, sir. Have you ever been shot 41 times? Have you ever screamed? No one heard you cry. Have you ever died only so you can live? Have you ever lived only so you can die again, then be born again from these enemies on the borderline? Who'll be the next to fire 41 shots by the hollow side? He reached, sir, but he didn't have no peace, sir. But now he rests in peace, sir, in the belly of the beast, sir. You guys are vampires in the middle of the night, sucking on human blood. Is that your appetite, sir? You said he reached, sir, but he didn't have no peace, sir. But now he rests in peace, sir, in the belly of the beast, sir. Diallo, Diallo, Shemala to Stephen Biko. Diallo, Diallo, you told me the murder was an error. Diallo, Diallo, but every man will be judged. Diallo, Diallo, according to his words. Have you ever been held against your will, taken to a dark place where not even scientists can reveal? So what is for Caesar? Let it be for Caesar. 'Cause we don't want no peace, we want equal rights. Injustice. For Diallo, Diallo, similar to Stephen Biko.
So that was Wyclef Jean singing 41 Shots, based on a true story in the 1990s of Amadou Diallo being shot at 41 times and 22 rounds hitting him. A very, very sad story. And once again, the officers were found not guilty. So, and Wyclef Jean is a contemporary musician and saying, you know, we're singing for justice, justice for all, not just us, white people, but justice, you know, for all. And the last cut on a CD, Doug, that you have is called Dope, D-O-P-E, and it's written, it's a poem written by Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones. And what I find about this, it's a performance artist art piece. What I find really remarkable about this and the message that is part of it is, I guess I should preface that some people might find some of the language disconcerting. But to change it would be to change, the performance art. But the point of this performance piece is that who is responsible for all of this, all of this brutality, all of this terrorism, the lynching, the enslavement, the money that goes to the top? Who is responsible? So Amiri Baraka said, it must be the devil. It wasn't the white man. It wasn't the president. It must have been the devil. And how did we get on the boats coming over here anyway? Well, it must have been the devil. We must have thrown our own selves on those boats. But the idea then at the same time is what some churches are sermoning about. And that is, it's okay. Whatever happens now, you'll be rewarded in heaven. Once you die, you will get your true reward in heaven.
Yeah. So suffer now and shut up.
Yes, yes. So this is also one of my favorite pieces.
All right, here it is.
This is a poem, I guess, that reflects living in Newark, but I guess living in any ghetto. It's called Dope. Ooh, 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 ooh. Ray light morning fire lynch yet. Yes, the pain in dreams comes again. Race pain, people are people are people everywhere. Yeah, ooh, 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 yeah, ooh, 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 yeah. Our people, yes, people, every people, most people, ooh, 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 yeah, ooh, 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 most people in pain. Yes, the pain and pain today. Oh, wow, oh, wow, it must be the devil. Oh, wow, oh, wow, it must be the devil. It must be the devil. It must be the devil. Oh, wow, oh, wow, yeah, devil, yeah, devil. Oh, wow, must be the devil. Must be the devil. Must be the devil. It can't be Rockefeller. It can't be him, no, Lord. It can't be DuPont, no, Lord. Can't be, no, Lord. No way, no way, Nassau, no way, Jose. Can't be them rich folks. They's good to us. 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 I know that Master told me so. I seed it on Channel 7. I seed it on Channel 9. I seed it on Channel 4 and 2 and 5. The rich folks good to us, poor folks ain't shit. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Oh wow, oh wow, everything gonna be different after we die. We ain't gonna be hungry, ain't gonna be pain, ain't gonna be suffering, won't go through this again after we die. After we die, oh wow, oh wow, wow. After we die, it's all gonna be good. Have all the money we need after we die. Have all the food we need after we die. Have a nice house like the rich folks after we die. After we die, after we die, we can live like Reverend Ike after we die. Hallelujah, hallelujah. Must be the devil. It ain't capitalism. It ain't capitalism. It ain't capitalism. No, it ain't that. Jimmy Carter wouldn't lie. Life's unfair, but it ain't capitalism. Must be the devil. Oh wow, it ain't the police. Jimmy Carter wouldn't lie. You know Rosalind Wooden or Lillian. His drunken racist brother ain't no reflection on Jimmy. Must be the devil got him, I tell you. The devil killed Malcolm and Dr. King too. Even killed both Kennedys and Pablo Neruda. Overthrew Allende's government. Killed Lumumba and is negotiating with Step and Fetch It. Sleep and eat in Birmingham over there in Salisbury. Going under the name of Ian Smith. Must be the devil. It can't be Vosta. It can't be apartheid. It can't be imperialism. Jimmy Carter wouldn't lie. Then you hear him saying his State of the Union message. I swear on Rosalind's face lifted catatonia. I wouldn't lie. Nixon lied. Haldeman lied. Dean lied. Hoover lied. Hoover sucked. too, but Jimmy don't. Jimmy wouldn't. Jimmy ain't lying. It must be the devil. It must be the devil. Put your money on the plate. It must be the devil. In heaven, we'll all be straight. It can't be Rockefeller. He gave Amos Poot Booty a scholarship to Behavior Modification University, and Genevieve Almost White works for his foundation. It must be niggas. It can't be Mellon. He gave Winky Suckass a fellowship in his bank. Put him in charge of closing out mortgages in the low-life Pittsburgh Hill nigger section. It can't be him. Yes, sir. 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 Put your money in the plate. Don't be late. Don't have to wait. You're going to be in heaven after you die. You're going to get all you need once you're gone. Yes, sir. I heard it on the Jeffersons. I heard it on the Rookies. I swallowed it whole on Roots. Wasn't it nice? Wasn't it nice? Slavery was so cool, and all you had to do was wear derbies and vests and train chickens and buy your way free if you had a mind to. Must be the devil. It wasn't the white folks, them lazy niggas chained theyself and threw their own black asses in the bottom of the boats. Well, now that you mention it, there was a certain King Ass Black Uwasi that helped throw your ass in the bottom of the boat, your mama, your wife, and you never see them no more. It must have been the devil. Give me your money. Put your money in this plate. Heaven will be here soon. You just gotta die. Just gotta stop living. Close your eyes, stop breathing, and bam-o, heaven be here. You have all of what you need. Bam-o, all of a sudden, heaven be here. You have all of what you need. That assembly line you work on will dissolve in thin air. Oh, wow-wow. Oh, wow-wow. Just gotta die. Just gotta die. This old world ain't nothing. Must be the devil got you thinking so. It can't be Rockefeller. It can't be Morgan. It can't be capitalism. It can't be national oppression. Oh, wow, no way. Now, go back to work and cool it. Go back to work and lay back just a little while longer till you pass. It's all gonna be all right. Once you're gone, give me that last bit of silver you got stashed there, sister. Give me a dust now, brother man. It'll be okay on the other side. Your soul be clean, be washed pure white. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, wow. Now go back to work. Go to sleep. Yes, go to sleep. Go back to work. Yes. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yes. Yes. Amen.
And that is Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones, who was the poet laureate of New Jersey until people realized that he was such a voice. I just very quickly, I want to leave us on a positive note here. The Seven Principles of Kwanzaa, and this is was put together in 1966 by Karinga, and I subscribe to this. The day after Christmas through New Year's, each day is to focus on a particular value. Day one is unity. Day two is self-determination. Day three is working together. Excuse me. Day four is supporting each other. Day five is purpose. Day six is creativity. And day seven, Amani, is faith. Faith in ourselves. And thank you, Doug, for having me on your show.
Well, thank you, Pamela. Great poetry and a great, I think, a clearer definition of Black history that more of us need to hear to understand race in this country. We still have a problem. We have a Black president, but we still have a problem. So thank you for that. And we are just about out of time. Probably hear some music coming in. I wanted to not only thank Pamela, but thank her again because she worked so hard at this and she's great at what she's doing. So
you're welcome.
Well, that's our sign-off music. You've been listening to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I will put the archives of this show along with some links to some of the material we presented here. Also, we are going to try to play some more of this Black History poetry tonight on Late Night Poetry Jam at 10 p.m. So if you want to tune in, if you missed part of this or you want to have somebody else listen in, we'll be able to do this again 10 p.m. tonight on Late Night Poetry Jam.
I'm Pamela Spoto, host of Late Night Poetry Jam, which plays the last Saturday of every month at 10 p.m. This is KKRN 88.5 FM. We also stream live. Hope you enjoyed our show focusing on Black history. And I say, power to the people.